But what we found was going to Russia and having Regina speak Russian did not really work at all. But when we go to the Spanish-speaking countries and we have the story in Spanish, it really worked fantastically. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of a cultural thing. The Russians didn't find... They didn't really like that we were trying to speak their language. Russians have a very, very particular relationship with their language, and even all the surrounding countries I've found that were conquered by Russia and kind of smushed by Russia still have this incredible regard for the Russian language, that there's just things you can say in it that you can't say in their language or in our language.
Right.
So for us to go into Russia and try to speak their language, it just didn't quite work.
but
like, when we went to the Spanish-speaking countries, and Naida, the woman who read the story for us in Spanish, she has a particular, you know, you have to deal with accents too, because Spanish is spoken all around the world. So there's the Mexican accent, there's the Spanish accent, there's South American accent. She has kind of a neutral accent because her father's from Colombia and her mother's from Peru.
Right.
She was able to just, everywhere we go and she speaks, the people just kind of go in further to the piece with us. So that's one of the, I mean, certainly it's been really fascinating for us to take the piece around because of the different responses. And I'll just divert a little more, a little short story on that too. I found that every once in a while, it may happen in every gig, but I don't always get the response. Somebody has, there's like a certain percentage of the audience that has an incredible experience. And every once in a while I get to hear about this. And when we were in Mexico City, it's happened maybe 4 or 5 times since we've been performing. This woman came up to me and she was kind of shaking. And I was like, all right, you've got, I know that buzz. You've got that buzz. And
yeah.
She was like, the story, somehow the story, the opening of the piece, just kind of told the story of what was going on in her life symbolically in a way that it didn't actually creep her out, but it was kind of like watching somebody else dream your dream.
Yeah, she was kind of felt, you know, like there was a major parallel.
Yeah.
In
really, really specific little icons, the color of the hair or whatever. And that's certainly what I'm shooting for, and I had a hunch that that was possible when we first started doing the piece. So that's really fascinating, especially when you're crossing... It's easy to cross cultural borders with pure music.
Mm-hmm.
But when you do it with language and multimedia, it's really fascinating.
Well,
so that's my short story on that.
Well, you've done it, and it's like, you know, when you look at the disc at first, and then you know you look at some of the people. It's like this disc kind of came together in parts with so many different great talents. I mean, you also have other people doing voice on this. Azam Ali.
Azam is singing. I got a couple of great drummers. Pat Mastellotto played on the track, and then my buddy Matt Chamberlain. I don't know if you know Matt. Do you know about Matt?
Vaguely, but I'm you can fill me in.
Matt's like kind of an undercover guy. I met Matt when I was first recording the David Sylvian Robert Fripp record in Woodstock, and he was like 19 or 20 years old, but maybe he was 22. He had just finished a year playing on the Saturday Night Live band, which was crazy for those guys, because young guys don't get that gig. You're not even supposed to get that gig when you're young.
Right.
He's a really great player, and then he's gone on to play. He's pretty much played with everyone from David Bowie to, I mean, his main gig is he's been playing with Tori Amos for about 15 years, but he plays with Bill Frisell and he plays with everyone. He's just a wicked hot session player, but he's got crazy weird chops too. He's got this band out here called Critters Buggin'.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really experimental, super high energy freakout band. It's like a jam band, but if the guys were uber uber talented.
Right. And you got like I said, I mean, you got your buddy Pat, you know, back onto this one here to help you out. But you know, I mean, all in all, you know, it's the final product. I think the vibe I got from it was, you know, I mean, it's kind of a, like, I want to say an existential story, but like, why did you guys go with this? What was it with the Arrow that made you want to put this all together to make as an album?
I don't know if I can answer that question. Not because I don't want to. You know, I, it, it just kind of got birthed while we were working. You know, it began with this particular story that I had written. I started finding a way of coming across story in text, largely probably because my son was born and I started telling him stories. And Joe and I wanted to do something beyond music. And we didn't, you know, one of the things that a lot of people do if they want to do something beyond music is they go into the film industry. And we didn't want to make a movie, we wanted to have performance. So the story just kind of blossomed from that. We took about a one-month break out in New Mexico, and I pretty much wrote all the stories and we organized the whole piece within about a month period, and then it took us about 18 months to flesh it out so it felt satisfying to us. Because the truth is, there isn't anything like this, and we didn't even really know what we were doing. We just kind of had to fish our way through it and feel if it felt right. Did it feel good to have this on the screen? Did it feel good to have this music here, this word? Does this sound right? Or
right.
Is it too wordy? You know, or do the words go by too fast in order to absorb it? So
this was brave, Trey. I mean, this was very brave. You and Joe putting out not only just the CD, but an accompanying DVD as well. I mean, this was a big task.
It was. It's pretty much like making a feature film with just two guys.
Right. But with a great cast.
Yeah, and we're excited about where we go next, because we want to use, you know, because we don't think of ourselves as a band, we don't have to be limited to the two guys on the stage. Or actually, we've been performing with live percussion too. You know, we want to have more actors and performers embedded in the video with us. And obviously, I have a lot of, I don't want to say I have a lot of famous friends, but I have some famous friends, but I also know some real characters.
No, don't be so modest.
So we're looking to see how we can incorporate all the characters that we know in the world in a further way that kind of blossoms it even more.
Well, I'll tell you, this Quodia thing, by the way, friends, if you're online tonight, you can check out the website. It's at www.quodia.com. That's Quodia.com. And also at MySpace as well, myspace.com/Quodia. I also like the little homage to Geronimo's story there when the fire was slow. I was... Nice incorporation in that. I like that.
Yeah.
But you got to be really happy with this, Trey. Once again, you know, as always, you know, you've been a longtime friend of the show. I mean, I remember, I always bring this up to you. It was always, you know, back in that Long Acre Theater show back in 1995 up in New York City. And it was the first time I met you. We were backstage doing this interview in this room where there was like these old pipes and radiators that didn't
work. That's right, I remember that.
You know, and I look back on that and I thought, wow, you know, not only have you come a long way, Trey, but it's like the Gagley Archives have come a long way as well. And it's so good to see that you're still moving along. I'm still moving along. What's next? What are you going to do next?
We're still breathing.
Yeah.
You know, I have, I've done some playing on some interesting records, actually, and I'm on the new Pussifer record.
Okay.
Do you know what that is?
No.
That's Maynard of Tool's kind of side project that he's just blossoming out this October.
Okay.
And it's pretty cool. It's very, at least the track I played on was more bootsy than Tool, and he's got some crazy guests too, which is really cool. And I just got a call from Hector Zazu, who's a really fantastic producer in France who does a lot of stuff. And then I have a little secret project you'll be hearing about, I'm going to probably be a part of here in the next couple of months, that I can't say anything about.
I think I can imagine. I'm not going to say anything either.
It's ironically an uber prog rock project.
Yeah, it's such a dirty word, prog. Such a dirty.
Well, it is.
But what about
you?
What about you, Trey? Are you going to do a solo album? Are we going to get another Trey Gunn album soon?
We are. I'm working. I mean, I finishing up this Arrow project was a big, big chunk of my life.
Right.
I've been doing a lot of TV and film scoring over the last couple of years, and I've decided to, I figured out a way to actually put some of that material out on disc, and I'm just kind of finishing up that disc. A lot of the material, I mean, I think one of the reasons why I'm good at doing film and TV music is that I'm able to let the music be unfinished in the particular way that works with the imagery.
Right, right.
But then when you take that music and put it and listen to it in a CD form, it's unfinished,
right.
Which is why it worked in the first place. So I was never able to take this huge body of work that I've my scoring work and actually put it on CD. But I figured out a way to do it, and I'm flushing out with some other newly recorded tracks, and it's going to be cool. So far, it's like it's about 50 minutes, and I think there's 38 tracks on it.
Wow. And what are some of the, are these like documentary shows? Are these like, you know?
Some of those, you know, I did a score for this Russian filmmaker for a big film that came out in Russia earlier this year. Some TV stuff. I don't even know what.
Right.
I've done a lot of sports TV.
Get out.
Yeah.
That's
awesome. I do a lot of stuff on ESPN.
Get out.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if I would have known, I mean, I'm a sports junkie, you know, besides being a prog rock DJ.
Well, prick your ears up. You might hear me in there.
Yeah. Well, you know, I can't wait to hear that too as well. But Trey, you know, I know you're a busy man, but, you know, I just want to say thanks again, man. It's, you know, it's like we meet up every year or so, and it seems like, you know, like nothing has changed in our rapport, and I'm glad to see that, you know, you're one of the good guys, and keep doing what you're doing. And any chance of Quote ever, you know, maybe coming to Philadelphia?
We are. We're trying to figure out how to do America. America is a hard gig for this thing.
Yeah, I know.
You know, in Europe, they bring in cultural events, government sponsored, and our trickiest thing is finding venues that are right for us, because rock clubs don't work.
Right.
So we need small theaters. So we're working on that.
Yeah.
We're working on that.
Yeah. But listen, Trey, I want to thank you again. And for those of you once again online, check it out at Quotia.com. You can also visit our website at GagliArchives.com. And what's your one of your favorite pieces that we'll close out tonight with this from this brand new CD?
I'm a big fan of I Saw Two Hands.
I Saw Two Hands, Part 3. Once again, friends, Trey Gunn, you're the man. And we're going to talk to you soon. So you take care of yourself, buddy.
Thanks, Tom.
All right, bye.